parking lot, walking around to a vehicle. And, you know, I said something to her, they're thinking, okay, yeah, but what she had done, she pulling in or back, she had hit the car next to her. So she was seeing what type of damage, and I'm sure she stayed there until the person went back. She says she forgets things. Stella, I can't think of her last name. Stevens. Oh, yeah, because she came here. Yes, okay. When they had her celebration of life, she wanted to go, but she said she just, and people had said they'd come get her and everything. And she said, and I had a speech. Of course, Pat always had something to say. And but she said, I forget. I was afraid I'd forget what I was saying. So anyway, she did write out her speech. And
right, she passed that on to somebody else.
His essence, I think, read it. So Sam, her significant other, of course, they don't live together, but he's helping her when she goes somewhere. But she's very much attached to her home right now. Because she's so afraid if she has another heart attack, she wants to be right there in the hospital. So,
we're going to have to begin.
I'm sorry.
We're going to have to begin. Thanks, Mario. Usually we have a few more, few more in our live audience. Good morning, fellow space travelers. Hope you're doing well on this Palm Sunday. So let's connect, ground ourselves and one another. So I invite you to close your eyes for a moment. Take a couple of deep breaths. And try on this word for size. Innocence. I am not just innocent, I am innocence. There is nothing the matter with me. There is no blame. There is no shame. There is no guilt. There is a huge difference between what the world tells me I am and my soul tells me I am. Which one am I going to believe? Which one am I going to listen to? Listen with your heart. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Okay. I was going to start off with a little bit of an aside, but I think it fits in with today's lesson anyway. So most Christian churches today are celebrating what's called Palm Sunday, or the, as it's called in the Gospels, the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, where Jesus is riding on a donkey and people are going nuts. They're pulling branches off the palm trees. They're even taking their coats off, putting them on the ground and saying, Hosanna to the Son of David. And the apostles are all puffed up because they figure finally, at last, people have gotten the message. Jesus got the message. He's going to be the Messiah, going to be the Savior, going to be the way, the person who conquers the Roman Empire, whatever way you want to look at it. And that joy was very brief. Because Palm Sunday quickly turned into Good Friday. What happened? What happened? We've all probably had our own Palm Sunday experiences where we've kind of gotten not caught, well, maybe caught up in the material world, success, money, fame, fortune, however you want to look at that. And thought because it's there and I'm experiencing some earthly freedom and some earthly happiness that I've arrived. I've got it made. Probably very quickly for most of us, the rug gets pulled out from underneath. And that's not a it's not a judgmental thing. The reason why the things of the world are called an illusion is because they don't last. It's like my new car. I get a new car and I fall in love with my new car. Well, a week later, it's not a new car anymore. But I'm still attached to my new car, something that doesn't exist anymore. Thinking somehow or another, I'm going to get some gratefulness, some gratitude, some spiritual movement from that. The Dalai Lama put it very simply. He said, the problem you all have in the Western world is you try and solve spiritual problems by material means, and it doesn't work. I'm wondering for me, how many times am I going to realize it doesn't work? Maybe if I get a new camera, maybe if I get a new guitar, maybe if I get a new this or a new that, maybe if I remodel the kitchen, maybe if I get a new paint job, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do that. And I realize, as soon as I get what it was that I wanted, I realized that I didn't really want it that much anymore. Where Ram Dass put it, he said, you know, you could spend years trying to manifest a Cadillac. And once you get it, you realize you didn't really want it in the first place, or it didn't do what you wanted it to do. So we're going to begin on page, what is it? 19, I guess, XIX. And I want to express again my gratitude to all of you for being here. Because I couldn't do this without you. I really couldn't. I mean, I could read a book and I could talk out loud to myself, but I couldn't do the same process we're doing together. Because the combined energies that we have does something very, very different than just one or two or three people. Jesus put it very simply too as well when he said, whenever two or more are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. And I really believe that's true. So to all the two or more sitting out there in your living rooms, thank you. Paul interrupts the teaching. Innocence? Why do you call the book Innocence? The guide suggests. Because the Book of Innocence is a reclamation of the truth of yourselves in its most pure state. In other words, you never fell from grace. There's no such thing as original sin. You invented that. I'm not sure why you invented that. It doesn't work anyway, but you did. There's no such thing. Who is it? Matthew Fox wrote a book called Original Blessing. Turned the whole thing around. The Christ is unblemished, and the Christ is the aspect of the Creator that is present in each of you. It is the seed of the divine seeking its flower. It is the seed of the divine seeking its flower. Was it Meister Eckhart, the German mystic, said, "The seeds of God grow into God itself." Repeating actually the same thought, the same idea. It is the seed of the divine seeking its flower. It is God announcing itself in the form you have taken. God announcing itself in the form you have taken. It is the truth of your being without fear, in love, and in agreement to its source. The way I've put it so numerous times in the past was, you are a unique expression of divine consciousness. And your personality and your ego and your whatever else you might become attached to as your vehicle here on planet Earth eventually become the unique lens through which the divine light shines through. And it says something very interesting. We say yes to each of you as you say yes to the path before you. Indeed, you have come, you have come, you have come. What stands before you today is a recognition of the idea of the self that you have utilized thus far seeks to be repositioned, realigned, recalibrated in the octave of the upper room. Self, you see, capital S, as you have known self, is a requirement for the embodiment you have chosen. You will not be without self. You will not be without self. In some mysterious way that we can't explain with our minds, some mysterious way, you will be an expression of divine nature, and at the same time, you will not lose your identity. Now, the Buddhists and the Hindus believe that eventually you will lose your identity. You will simply be, you'll be in nirvana. You will be absorbed into the oneness. And there'll be no Linda, there'll be no Jerry, there'll be no Margot. What this is suggesting is that as you are being absorbed into the oneness, you will not lose that unique quality that you've created for yourself, both this lifetime and other lifetimes. So the next lifetime, you're also going to be a unique expression of divine consciousness. But that's going to be a different kind of unique expression than the one you have today. I can't explain that in logical terminology, but we can know that as being the truth. And so if you get to a point where you say, I wish I could get rid of this damned ego, pain in the ass, remember what it truly is. It is, first of all, it's not the enemy. It is the unique lens through which the divine light shines through. And if I hold it as such, it no longer becomes the enemy. It no longer becomes something to get rid of. It's something, becomes something to love, to cherish, to honor as being part of my truth. You will not be without a self. You are not extinguished as a personality in the upper room. The personality structure is realigned here to a higher purpose, to be that lens through which the divine light shines through, rather than an object of separateness. Oh, I have a personality and ego that makes me separate from you. Wouldn't it be really interesting to realize in the upper room, I have an ego and a personality self, and that does not make me separate from you. Now, I don't know how that works. I can't explain that in words, but I know it does. I am a unique expression of divine experience. I have a personality and I have an ego consciousness. And in the lower realms of awareness, it makes me separate from you. In a higher reign of consciousness, it has no idea of separateness. We are one. What is not intact, oh, let me just finish that sentence. Your uniqueness is intact, yes? What is not intact is your desire for separation, which has a basis in fear. And your separation from your brothers, your idea of self as opposed to others, in all ways contributes to your sense of isolation and indeed separation from God itself. Even though there is no such thing as separation, you experience that through unique consciousness when you are living in a lower realm of awareness. In fact, some people revel in their difference from other people. I am better than you are. Dig me. Now, God must be understood as a tone or a sound, as a vibration, not as a thing. God is here, boom. God's a monolith. God is unchangeable. God is immutable, boom. God must be understood as a tone or a sound. In the beginning was the Word, and the beginning is eternal. And the Word itself, the tone of God, consciousness as sound and tone, must be understood as the source of all things.
Gary?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to the first paragraph for a moment. I'm intrigued by the use of the words upper room. I don't remember. I know that we've run into that before in these books, but I don't remember the first time and what the explanation was. What relationship might this have with the way we use upper room, referring to the upper room where Jesus and his disciples had the Last Supper?
Yeah, I think there's a congruence there. Okay, I had the same impression, John. That they are, what's interesting, the upper room is sort of the basis of, first of all, it was where the Last Supper was celebrated, which fits in with the season we're talking about right now, with the first Passover, actually, first Christian Passover. And then, after the crucifixion, the apostles huddled in the upper room. They were scared to death. They thought they were going to be crucified as well. And that was the place where they stayed. It was safe to be there. And it wasn't until what we call Pentecost, the descent of the Holy Spirit on the apostles or planet Earth, that they were able to, and that also happened in the upper room. When that happened, they almost allowed themselves, physically speaking, to leave that safe place and to go out into the world, because they knew that nothing real could be taken away from them. So there's a whole bunch of metaphors that are connected with that upper room. The upper room also is another description of what we sometimes refer to as the kingdom of heaven. In fact, I think they, from reading most of these books, although they don't say this out loud, I have the sense that they are identical. The upper room and the kingdom of heaven, as a mode of perception, as a mode of realization, are the same thing.
Oh, let me jump on another idea. You were just talking about this notion of oneness. So I'm thinking of two different things. One is the morphogenetic field, where apparently we are all connected and are one, and so we can learn from that, from what others do. The other is the idea that Casey wrote about, or talked about rather, where we were one with God, and we said, we thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we were all separate and we separated? And that was kind of, to me, that's the first time God said, okay, well, I will let you do what you choose to do, and we'll see what happens.
That's what the Course in Miracles calls a tiny mad idea. It starts off by saying, I wonder what it would be like if we were separate. Just an idea, just a thought. But it turned into a very fearful event and actually produced a sense of separateness. The metaphor I use for this, John, is that imagine a little child is going to bed. Mom and dad say goodnight, kiss them goodnight, turn the light off, maybe leave the door open a crack. And the thought comes to his little mind, I wonder what it would be like if there was a monster under my bed. That's just a thought, just an idea. But that is immediately followed with the thought of maybe there is a monster under my bed. And that's followed by the next thought of, oh my God, there is a monster under my bed. And once I got caught up in that reality, I think that that's real. So I wonder what it would be like to be separate.
Well, you've just triggered a couple questions in my mind. What would it be like if there was a monster in the White House? Oh my goodness, there is a monster in the White House.
No, no
There we are, John.
comment. What would it be like if you could see? What would it be? Hey, moment, I'll ante, raise the ante here for a moment. What would it be like to see? What would it be like if I could see the monster in the White House through the eyes of the Christ? And what if I could realize he's not the enemy, but a teacher?
Yeah.
He is a teacher.
And guess who chose the teacher?
We did. Through our actions, right, Jerry? Through our actions also.
Yeah, and again, that's not an individual choice. We're talking about a
Yes.
collective consciousness here. But yeah, Jim.
So I just read something a couple of days ago, and that resonated
Can you guys hear him okay?
with me.
I'll repeat it if you don't hear it.
So I just read it a couple of days ago, and basically it says those persons that push our buttons perhaps are our best people.
Those who push our buttons, perhaps, are our best teachers. The way I came across it, Jim, fairly recently too, was your job is unconditional love. Everybody else's job is to push your buttons.
I feel like I've gotten two doctorate degrees. Jerry, so in looking at this like collective consciousness, we have all chosen through our actions of greed, power, separation from truth to so this has manifested all of this for us, or say in the White House, a symbol of what we as a collective unity have created. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's kind
If
of like
there is a correct.
what seems to happen on the spiritual plane is when we are ready to grow, when we're ready to take a quantum leap in consciousness, that we create this movement of what we might call negativity, but it's not really. We create this friction, might be a better word. And of course, as the friction increases, the fire gets a little bit hotter, right? We create that until we reach a Popeye moment. I can't stand no more, right? I reach this point, where either I keep trying to go the way I'm going, or the system breaks down. So it's let me give you a personal example of that with my alcoholism and chemical dependency. For a while, it didn't seem like an addiction. It just seemed like, actually, it seemed like a good thing as far as I was concerned. And then it started deteriorating, kind of going downhill. And I kept holding on to the dream. I kept holding on to get the high the way I wanted to feel. And that kept getting more and more elusive. And I kept trying to convince myself that it's still there. Right? And so things continued to deteriorate until I couldn't hold the facade up anymore. It was cracking, it was falling down around me. And it's almost like what happens is that the disease, the addiction, pushes as far as it can push until either, you know, you die from it, right? Or you break through, like John was talking about, that morphogenetic field. I break through that field that's been holding me back. I surrender, and it's a total and complete surrender. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this any longer.
Jerry?
Yeah.
So now, would that relate to the possibility of, as we are breaking down, just like you said, we're breaking down with the consumptions, the greed, the this, so until the collective consciousness sees, like you saw, this is no longer working. It's no longer working, this addiction to our power and oneness that has taken over, represented by what's going on. And little by little, the collective consciousness decides to again start a, shall I say, rebirth.
What's no longer working is the faith that I have put in the government, the faith I put in the stock market, the faith I put in material things. I find out that is no longer working. That no longer is giving me what I expected to give me.
Mm-hmm.
So my faith in the external world is what is collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
What the realization is that I must deal with the spiritual world, the inner life that I have been given. That's where the changes happen. They don't happen out there. They happen in here. So what is it that I need to heal, to transform, to let go of?
But then it starts to manifest in the world out there, right? Once these...
Eventually they will, but...
Yeah.
I would suggest, actually, for those of us who are doing, let's say, doing the work we're doing right now, is that new world, that upper room, that kingdom of heaven, right, is manifesting already.
Yes.
Or we wouldn't be here. We would have said, oh, well, that class doesn't work. How with that? Book of Innocence. Well, that's all they're doing is changing the clothes on the same old ideas that never worked before. And I know we don't believe that. That's one of the reasons why we're here. We're here because we're saying, I am putting my faith into a higher reality. I might not be able to define that for you. I might not be able to define that for anybody else, really, as far as that goes. But I know that that's true. I know that that's true. I know it's not just that change is going to come. It's not a passive reality. Is that, as Gandhi said, you know, be the change you want to have happen. And we are beginning to realize that this is the responsibility of each one of us to hold on to the truth of who you are, hold on to the truth of who others are, right, in order to make this manifest in the material world. It is already present in the spiritual world. And so for each one of us, we might want to ask ourselves, How do I make this truth that I already know is true? How do I make that manifest in the material world that I'm living in? Yeah, Jim.
So what comes to me is this, and I definitely echo what you said, Jerry, that groups like ours and other groups across the world that are doing this work, I have to remind myself that that which is going to emerge, not when it's going to emerge, probably won't happen in my lifetime.
Might not.
And I think that because of this maybe microwave culture, it's like, okay, I want change right now. And so that's where it becomes like, is this working or not? And you're right, Jerry, it is working. But the real of it is to know that it is working. And know that, again, perhaps it won't happen in my lifetime, but it is working, because this is the individual consciousness that we're doing. It's going to, and it will, outpour into the collective consciousness. And that's really the thing in terms of, am I willing to be good with that? I talked to myself about that, surrendering, being patient in the process, and not knowing the details of how this or so is going to happen.
Yeah. Another thing that happened in the upper room after after Easter Sunday was Jesus appeared to the apostles, and Thomas was there for the first time. And Thomas was the one who said, I will not believe this, that he has arisen, right, unless I can put my hand in his side and put my fingers in the holes in his hand. And so Jesus appears this time and says, come here, Thomas. And Thomas falls flat on his face and says, my Lord and my God. And Jesus followed up with that, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen what's manifesting in the material world right now, but believe it is happening at this moment. That's my truth. Make sense?
Yes.
We jumped off at this point here. Now, God must be understood as tone or sound. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word itself, the tone of God, consciousness as sound and tone, must be understood as the source of all things. In the Hindu and Buddhist religion, there is this concept or this idea, really more of a spiritual idea, of this unique energy, this unique vibration, this unique sound, which is Aum. That is the beginning of the Word. It is the sound of creation. It is a tone. It is a vibration. See, they have a language that is much more understandable to them than it is to us. We work out of, is it here or not? Can I see it? Can I feel it? Can I touch it? Can I taste it? Is it here or not? And they're saying, no, it's more like a sound, more like a vibration. It's like when you love somebody, how do you know? Or when you, let's put it another way, when you are loved, how do you know? Without words, without somebody touching you, without somebody telling you, without somebody writing you a postcard, how do you know that you are loved? Because you are in the vibration of that love. You're in the vibration of that awareness. You're in the vibration of that oneness. Can you explain that to somebody else? Probably not. Does it matter? Probably not. The sound of God is the experience and expression of God. I was giving a retreat years ago, and Margo and I were doing this in healing workshop. And I remember during one of the breaks, I was talking to one of the participants who was, I was familiar with. She had been to a number of other workshops. She said, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" I said, "Sure." She said, "You know, up until a little while ago, I really could feel kind of a joyfulness and a happiness of the presence of God within me and around me." She said, "I don't feel that anymore. Am I doing something wrong?" And it was one of those moments where I, instead of just glibly offering a piece of information, I sat there quietly with her, offered a prayer, and the words that came out of my mouth were, "Sometimes the yearning for God is the same as the presence of God." And we both got it. We hugged and we cried. "Sometimes the yearning for God is the same as the presence of God." The sound of God is the experience and the expression of God. The expression of God may be manifest or unmanifest. You might be able to touch it, feel it, taste it, and you might not. But that does not mean it's not still there. Sometimes the yearning for God is the same as the presence of God. Both are equally true and valid. What you see with your eyes, what you hold with your hands are of God. But what is seen with the eyes may also be understood as participatory to that one sound, a manifestation, a depiction, the way that sound is sown and solidified in form. What is unseen or the etheric, realities you may comprehend, exists beyond the senses, but may be aligned through the senses. And your experience as we continue this teaching will indeed include what you would think of as otherworldly. Otherworldly simply means that the senses that you have held, born in a sense of separation and collective agreement and separation, have not been endowed with the ability to perceive what is already present, what is always present and may be known. In other words, we are going beyond that sense of separation, collective agreement to separation, because it has been not endowed, because it doesn't work. It's not the truth. That is the illusion. Otherworldly means we are going beyond the illusion of separateness. We are going beyond anything the world might tell you that makes you feel separate or experience separateness. We're going beyond that and saying, you can decide that's real for yourself if you want to, but we're saying it is not. It is beyond thought, it is beyond reason, it is beyond the senses. I'm going to do one more paragraph and then we're going to do our meditation. I got to close a little bit early this morning. Yeah, Paula? Okay. Now, some of you say to us, "I just want a happy life. I want a little less pain, a little more joy, far less worry. Will I have that if I do what you say?" Indeed, and more. But this is a book of recreation and recognition of who you have been and what you have seen and perceived in the limited strata of the world you've known yourself through is necessary. In other words, you've got to take a look at the persona that you created, the person you think you are, and be willing to let go of that. Be willing to understand, to let go, to become aware that might have been my truth for a number of years, but it is not the truth of who I am. It is not the truth of who I am today. I feel like I've run a marathon. You might feel that too.
I have one whole page underlined.
Yeah. And you know what? Tomorrow you'll probably underline another page. Or you might pick up the book a little bit later and say, what did I underline that for? Okay, we're going to take a couple minutes and then I got to go. I got duty on the platform this morning. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Take a couple of breaths. Relax. Open. Soften. And let yourself be for a moment. No place you have to go. Nothing you have to do. And get a sense of what it's like to vibrate with these words. I am creating a new heaven and a new earth. With all of my brothers and sisters, I am creating a new heaven and a new earth. And it is beginning to manifest in my own heart as I perceive more and more on a deeper level the truth of who I am and the truth of who you are. As I allow judgment to melt away. As I allow myself to become detached from fear, from vengeance, from misunderstanding. And as I open my heart to all beings in compassion, in love, in joy, in oneness. As I experience all of creation, especially that which is being manifest at this moment, in gratitude. As we say in unity so often, there is only one power, God the good, omnipotent. And I allow myself to absorb those truths like a sponge, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, touching every cell and fiber of my being. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Deep breath, stretch, and open your eyes when you're ready. And know that you can continue this work as part of your own individual path as this week unfolds. So thank you all for being here. Be at peace.
Great class, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The chair. Okay.